Okay, so you're not going to be voting in the election on June 28th. You've been fairly adamant about it. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about why that is.
Well, I mean, first of all, I would say that from now until June 28th, that Canadians will be bombarded with a variety of what I call grandiose promises and disaster scenarios of what will happen if we don't vote for a particular party or candidate. And she said this, and he said that, and she will do this, and he will do that, etc. And all these people will introduce a set of promises that have been introduced in almost every election campaign, including jobs and health care, education, environmental protection, tax cuts, etc. And after every single election, these promises are broken by the winners. And they continue on with their original agenda, which I feel is protecting the interests of power and privilege and systematically ripping off the Canadian people. And I feel that all these promises, as I stated in an op-ed I wrote recently, are merely smoke screens which delude us or Canadians into thinking that the promiser, i.e. the people who are campaigning, is the best person for the job and that they have our best interests at heart. And I think that the Canadian people are beginning to see this, and as you listen to the comments from people on talk radio and on the television, etc., people are pretty much fed up with politicians and all their promises that they make and all the promises that they break. And I, for one, will not be voting on June 28th, and I feel that all this talk of so-called democratic choice in the upcoming election is hogwash, to say the least, and the democracy, in my opinion, is much deeper than choosing a political candidate, but it is indeed about grassroots participation in the social and political evolution of our country
in order
to bring about real change.
So you would advocate, rather than voting, you would advocate for what is typically seen as an activist type of role of seeking change.
That's correct. I mean, many people equate not voting, first of all, with political apathy, and this could be farther from the truth. There are literally tens of thousands of people in this country who will not be voting in the upcoming election. But they are indeed very politically active, and they're working within various political groups, anti-war groups, anti-racist groups, faith-based groups, etc. And they're very much concerned about the direction in which this country is headed, but yet they have chosen not to participate in the traditional electoral system, and because they're fed up. People are completely fed up, and they're cynical, and they're getting tired of being lied to and being misrepresented or whatever. And they're working through grassroots organizations, which they feel, and I feel also, that they're much more democratic and representative of the diversity of this country.
Is part of the problem that the leaders of the parties that we see in soundbite form virtually every evening, I mean, the issues that they're talking about, while they're important, there seem to be huge, wide areas of common concern for people that they're not even addressing. I'll give you an example. As regards the Canadian military, it seems that virtually all of the representatives of at least the main political parties are in favor of increasing military spending. But what is absent is a discussion that involves foreign policy to any extent. For example, should we be propping up illegitimate governments in Haiti or Afghanistan? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for certain, these kind of issues are not coming up, and I think that for the most part that the Canadian population is not always aware of the fact of what their governments are doing in their name, and I think that there is a systematic attempt to keep this information from the general public. And I think also there's a bigger issue is that most parties, politicians, during election time, really don't commit themselves to anything concrete. They speak in generalities. If you're listening to The Current on CBC Radio, the voice they call him is just launched a party called, it's of course a spoof, but it's called the Ambiguous Party. And I mean, his platform is, he doesn't have a platform because the party is called the Ambiguous Party. But it's basically a spoof making fun of these other parties, because most parties, they'll sit or trying to straddle on the middle and not make any kind of concrete promises, So, and even if they do make a concrete promise, they can always kind of like, even if they rescind it later, they can always make it seem like, oh, I did keep my promise after all. So, yes, these issues are not being addressed, and even if they were properly being addressed, they really don't make any kind of commitment anyway.
Is there a minor, one of the non-large political parties in Canada that has spoken to any of your concerns to any extent?
Well, I would say that every party might have something good to say. I mean, as far as I would say that, maybe every party would have something legitimate to say that would speak to the general population, the general Canadian population. But I think we have to look much bigger than we stand for this and we stand for that. And I think that we have to look at the system as a whole. And I would say that as we see it now, that those who are running for political office do not reflect the diversity of today's Canadian society. Today's Canadian society is very, very diverse, but we see, for the most part, in federal politics in this country, that it still remains an old white boys club, and there's not enough representation of visible minorities and other people of color, and even ideological diversity. There's not much, and I would say also that the system itself is not grassroots enough. It's too elitist. I think that the parties are too elitist, and they're not grassroots enough and democratic enough on the ground. And this is one of the reasons that many people are just tuning out to all political parties altogether, whether they even be the smaller fringe parties, because they see this as a bigger system where all these promises are continually made. But in the long run, they're never kept anyways.
So we can argue that the system is fundamentally flawed, but I don't think that there would be anyone who would challenge that notion. But my question for you is, do you think that this system is flawed beyond reform? I.e., do you think you'll consider voting in another election perhaps sometime in the future, or do you categorically reject the notion of voting?
Well, I would say that what I would like to see is that I would like to see that people don't replace activism with voting, in the sense that, okay, I voted, I did my part, I'll be back in 4 years. This is bad, this is dangerous, because you're leaving the future well-being of this country to the hands of people you and I don't even know. We don't know what they stand for. All we hear, all we know about them is the sound bites that we hear on television, and these promises that they make and whatever, but they're being handled by all these different media handlers or image handlers. But I would like to see that people in this country would become more involved at the grassroots level to bring about positive social change in this country, and not just leave it to the politicians, and to put pressure on these people that they have to be responsive to the genuine concerns of the people, and not just what they say what we should be concerned about, but that what we're saying. Because sometimes they're telling us, oh, we should be concerned about this, or we should be concerned about that, which sometimes is true, but there's other issues, like you mentioned earlier, that we are also interested in discussing, and we want to have, we as the Canadian people, want to have an input. So the grassroots organizing and grassroots involvement is much more democratic and much more, I think, to ensure that elites and people who are in power don't abuse that power, and the future of the country would be much more secure, in my opinion.
You take the position in your article that voting adds legitimacy to the government, or at least to the process, which you describe rather accurately, I feel, as a farce, which is why I wondered what your feelings were on reform, because there are a lot of people proposing a lot of different electoral reforms.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm driving
well,
at?
Well, yeah, I think you're just tinkering with a pretty much corrupt system, in my opinion. This is just all tinkering, but I think that the system itself is somewhat, flawed.
right.
and does not represent the interests of the people. Like I said before, the people who are in power now are not the ones really in power. The people who are elected are not the ones really that hold the power in this country. The people who are really hold the power in this country, i.e. corporate elites and other elites, are not elected by anyone. And they're not answerable to anyone, and they don't, and they do not have the interests of the people at heart. Their goal is only one thing, the pursuit of profits, and as I said in my op-ed, and to hell with the annoying issues such as human rights and environmental protection and the erosion of our civil liberties, these kinds of things. So the people who are really in power, they're not, nobody votes them in, and they don't give a damn about anything that the people say. And these special interests are the people, are the interests who the elected officials are really beholden to, and not to the Canadian population. But they will refer to their electoral victory and say, see, I was mandated to do this, I was mandated to do tax cuts, I was mandated to do that, right? But in many times they're not mandated to do that at all. They put words in the mouths of the electorate, and so I would say that, like I said before, these people are there to work against our interests many times, to restrict our civil liberties, to steal more of our hard-earned money to ensure that the rich get richer and the poor remain in their impoverished condition. And I ask the question, what sane, rational person would want to support such a system?
And it's also interesting that historically these people who could be described as landlord or are people with substantial wealth were the original recipients of the franchise to vote in the first place. There was a time not too long ago when, for example, women didn't vote and tenants didn't vote. But despite the fact that there has been a change, we're still in a situation where many marginalized people do not participate in elections.
That's correct. And like I said before, because people are cynical, they're burnt out, they're tired of being lied to, they're tired of being... And they're tired of being just told one thing and then something else happens. And there's a sense of powerlessness. But I think that also that these grassroots organizations are filling in a very important gap. They're restoring a sense of power to the people that they and a sense of boldness and a sense of determination and confidence that they can make changes. And there are positive changes being made as a result of the efforts of these grassroots organizations all across this country. And I think this is a positive development.
People have suggested various ways in which the electoral system may be reformed to make it more democratic. So I'm interested in getting some of your feelings on some of those things. First of all, proportional representation. Do you have any feelings either way about that?
I would just say that any kind of measures that would make the system would be more in tune with the wishes of the people would certainly be much more, you know, much more democratic, and I think much better for the future of this country. And I'll just leave it at that, I guess.
Okay. A few of the other people I've interviewed have suggested that mandatory voting, such as exists in a country like Australia, is something that might be done. And I'm wondering if you share that opinion.
No, I wouldn't. I disagree with that. I think that that I have a right not to vote. I mean, some people say that, okay, well, you give up your right to complain if you don't vote. And I respond to that by saying, no, my right to complain is a human right, and nobody can take away my human rights. And mandatory voting would force me to vote for somebody that, what if they all stink? Then I have to vote for somebody that stinks. I don't think that is any kind of solution to the problem. I think the problem is that basically, even though the parties try to portray themselves as being ideologically distinct from one another, I think for the most part, and let's face it, the Liberals and the Conservatives are the two major parties in this country. Ideologically, they're the same. I mean, there's not much. They might tinker a little bit and say, oh, well, we about tax cuts and about health care and everything like that. But basically, fundamentally, if you vote for the Liberals or vote for the Conservatives, I think there's not going to be a lot of difference. The illusion is that we have real choice in this country when it comes to like the election time, and forcing people to vote is not going to solve any problems at all.
Well, certainly both of the big, what are seen as electable parties favor, say, tax cuts for the rich.
That's
or
right.
An increased military spending or any number of things that are probably not in alignment with most people's feelings. Mandatory voting would also put people like you and I, who don't vote for whatever reason, in a position that everybody else is in, which is having to choose the lesser evil, I guess.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is what some people do. I mean, I'm going to tell you, like, for example, in the community, and like, I'm a Muslim and I belong to a minority community, the vast majority of the thinking is that we're going to choose when they decide to vote, because maybe both parties are not really all that good, but they would choose the lesser of the two evils. And I think this is what many times, many minority groups, for example, that are not really in power that much, this is the kind of thinking that they go, well, we say, well, they're both rotten. Like in the States, the Muslim community voted for Bush in the last election, unbelievably.
That's a mistake.
Yeah, well, the other candidate was so rotten and refused to meet with the Muslim community also. Gore absolutely said no, and he actually returned money that was donated to him from the Muslim community. Actually, like, they sent him a check for donation, and he actually returned it. And so, I mean, they was, you know, caught between a rock and a hard place. And then they ended up voting for Bush, and now we know the disaster for the Muslim community.
Yes.
So
clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly. But that brings up an interesting point, which is that your views, although you're a Muslim person, do not necessarily represent the views of the community as a whole. There are certainly others who advocate voting.
Well, sure. I mean, most of the grassroots, I mean, most of the big organizations like the Canadian Islamic Congress or the Council of American Islamic Relations here in Canada, they really encourage the Muslim community to participate in the electoral process and to become involved. And, you know, I'm not one to, you know, like, be running counter to my own community. I respect that opinion very much. And I would say that our community, although outsiders may not see it, our community is very diverse, and it has a lot of different points of view on many things, as with any community does. And I'm just one voice in a community of many voices, and so, you know, I have this position, but certainly the most of the people in our community probably will end up supporting one candidate or the other. And usually, I would say, minority communities usually side with those parties who they think will win, because they don't want to be, I guess, double, but they feel like if they vote for somebody who's going to lose, then they're going to be shut out. And I have a different point of view on that. Is that if you're going to vote for a party, then you should vote on principle, not whether the party has a chance of winning or losing. Is that maybe, for example, we'd have to admit that, like, sometimes that the NDP party does take some principled stances on things that are of interest to our community. And I would say that, so if you are going to vote, is that I think you should vote on a party that is closest to your interest, because even if they don't win, they do get matching federal funds that can empower them to continue on with their project.
Have you had, because your opinion is very public, have you had criticism from your fellow community members over the position you've taken regarding voting?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're all friendly. I mean, I'm well known here in the community. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all friendly disagreements that, you know, I disagree that we should vote. Others people are, you know, that's a good point of view, but I disagree. And I think that there's most of the people on my mailing list, for example, I think are very sympathetic toward the NDP party at this time. And there's certainly, I mean, the Muslim community will not vote conservative. I'm most certain that they will be. See, when the Alliance Party first came out, the Muslim community was very, very attracted to the Alliance Party, because they were socially conservative. And for the most part, the Muslim community is very socially conservative, but very fiscally liberal. And so they were attracted to that, like pro-family values and everything like that. But as the Alliance Party continued to speak on different issues with regards to foreign policy and other issues, we certainly shied away from them within no time at all, right? So,
well, they've got some pretty, I mean, I don't know if you could call them straight out racist points of view.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we just can't possibly, I mean, the Muslim community is not going to vote for them. But we also, I mean, the Muslim community is also very much aware of many of the things that the Liberal Party has done to the, that has affected the Muslim community, such as the anti-terrorism legislation, which is, I would recommend everybody to read Professor Kent Roach's book on September 11th, the anti-terrorism legislation in Canada and after September 11th. Kent Roach is a professor at the University of Toronto. It's an amazing, I'm still reading it, but what this anti-terrorism legislation has done has basically rewritten the criminal code. And all the racial profiling and the security certificates and the allegations that the Canadian government has been complicit in sending people overseas for torture and so many other things. Trust me, we see that as a community. But we also see that the many members of the community also see that the other option is even worse, and that being the Conservative Party would be a complete disaster as far as the community is concerned.